Welcome to the Portland Christian Center podcast. This week, Pastor Ray Noah continues a series on Abraham with a message titled, Pass the Test. Now here's Pastor Ray.
That a faith that has not been tested is a faith that cannot be trusted. A faith that has not been tested is a faith that cannot be trusted. And that is exactly why God will allow, in fact, that God will even arrange at times for our faith to be tested. Because your faith is the most precious thing that you have. I mean, it really is. There's nothing in this life that is more precious than your faith. In fact, it's the only thing that you have in this life that you can take with you into the next life. It is more precious than any other commodity, any other thing, anything on planet Earth. That's why the Apostle Peter in chapter 1 talks about your faith as being even more precious than the most precious thing that he could think of, the most precious physical thing that he could think of, and that was gold that was refined by the fire, purified gold. It's more precious than that. And so that's why God graciously arranges for our faith to be tested. And that's why, as James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4 says, that we ought to rejoice then. We ought to be full of pure joy at the testing of our faith because of what it produces in us, the testing of our faith. The testing of Abraham's faith in Genesis chapter 22. We've been studying Abraham now for several weeks, so we come to chapter 22, and the testing of Abraham's faith, that is, the call, the command to offer up his only son Isaac as a sacrifice, is the most well-known of all the Abraham stories. And it is also the hardest story, the most difficult story for us to get our minds around. Not only out of the Abraham stories, but I think of out of all the stories of the Bible, this is the most challenging one to literally get our minds, or at least mentally get our minds around. And yet, rightly understood, this story is helpful, will be very helpful for you and for me in navigating our way through those necessary tests of faith that God arranges to come into our lives. So let's read this story, Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 14, and then we'll unpack it and try to make some sense of it. Genesis chapter 22, verses 1 through 14, it says, sometime later, God tested Abraham. He said, Abraham, take your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains that I will tell you about. Early the next morning, Abraham got up. He saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place that God told him about. On the third day, Abraham looked up and he saw the place in the distance. He said to his servants, stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go there. We will worship, and then we will come back to you. We will come back to you. So he took the wood for the burnt offering, and he placed it on Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As they went on together, Isaac spoke up, Father, the fire and the wood are here, but where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Abraham answered, Son, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering. And they went on. When they reached the place, Abraham built an altar, and he arranged the wood on it. Then he bound Isaac, and he laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he took the knife in his hand to slay his son. But the angel of the Lord called out from heaven, Abraham, Abraham! Here I am, he replied. Do not lay a hand on the boy. Do nothing to him. Now I know that you fear God, because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son. Abraham looked up, and he saw in a thicket a ram caught by its horns. He took the ram and he sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, the Lord will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. The Lord will provide. Authentic faith, true, real, authentic faith, doesn't demand an explanation. It stands on a conviction. It doesn't demand an explanation. It stands on the conviction, the expectation that God is always true to his character and he's always true to his promise. Always. Always. Thomas Aquinas, who was one of the most brilliant men who ever lived, he was a scholar, a doctor of the church, an intellectual in the 13th century, wrote this. He said, To one who has faith, no explanation is necessary. To one without faith, no explanation is possible. And I think this story comes pretty close to defying explanation. I mean, this is one that this is hard to explain. Wouldn't you say? I mean, a man, a father, called to sacrifice to slay his son, this one comes pretty close to defying explanation. It is one of what has been termed one of the hard sayings of the Bible. There are a whole list of hard sayings. This is one of the hard sayings of the Bible, perhaps the hardest. I would argue this is the hardest of those hard sayings. And even if we can generally accept this story on faith, when you personalize it, as a parent, if you put, or a grandparent, if you put yourself in Abraham's shoes, you will discover just how problematic this story really is. Now, I was well familiar with this story, having read it many, many times. I knew the story like the back of my hand. But there came a time when I needed to teach it, and Linda and I had just had our oldest daughter, Ashley. She had just been born, and I was scheduled to teach this story that week. And I thought, you know, if I'm going to really teach this story well, then I need to climb into Abraham's skin. So on a Saturday night, late Saturday night, Linda was in bed asleep and Ashley was in her crib. I walked into her room and I was just overcome with emotion. And I just stood there and I contemplated the mystery of life as I watched her little chest move up and down, and this mystery of a being that hadn't been there before, hadn't existed before, but now it was taking in oxygen. It was breathing in and out, the breath of life. And I thought, you know, just a few months ago, Ashley didn't even exist. And yet now, look at what Linda and I, through God's grace, have created. Something that didn't exist before now is the object of our unconditional love and such high hopes that we have for what her life will become. And then I thought, as I stood there, I thought, what if God suddenly spoke to me in this moment? What if God spoke to me and said, Ray, sacrifice your child to me. Take your daughter, Ashley, and offer her up to me as a sacrifice. And I got to tell you, in that moment, I wasn't so sure that I would be able to offer obedience to the Lord. And to this day, I'm not sure if God called me to do that, if God told me to take our grandson, Noah, and offer him as a sacrifice, if I would be able to comply with the divine command. I don't know. This is a tough one. But I do know, after having gone through that experience in her room that night, and the next day, I taught this story with a great deal more humility than I would have otherwise. What do you do with this story? Well, let's approach it this way. In this story, isn't just one, but two of the hard sayings of the Bible. Now, that's unusual. Most of these hard sayings are kind of spread out, but in this one story alone, there are two of the hard sayings of the Bible. The first one is in verse 1, and the second one is in verse 2. So we're going to take them one at a time. The first one from verse 1 says this: God tested Abraham. God tested Abraham. Now, the reason that's a hard saying is the fact that God would test his children assaults our confidence in the character of God, the moral nature of God, that God would put a test on us. I mean, what kind of loving father, what kind of loving God would do that? The word test, when we hear that word, it conjures up a negative reaction. I mean, we think of something that is meant to trip us up. A test is to be feared. It's a setup for failure. The harder the test, the more unfair and unkind the tester is. You know, when I took tests in school, that's what I thought. You know, when the teacher said, oh, here's a test, especially when it was a pop quiz, you knew they were out to trip you up. They wanted to expose something in you. But here's what we need to understand about divine tests. Divine tests are different than human tests. Here's what we need to know. First of all, God's tests are never without preparation. God will never test you without first preparing you. Notice the very first line. Sometime later, God tested. Sometime later. And with God, time always comes before testing. always. We have been reading about the life of Abraham from Genesis chapter 12. Actually, it begins in chapter 11, the last part of chapter 11, all the way up to this point. And all of the events in Abraham's life have led up to this moment. That's what the writer means by sometime later. All of these things, the test came only after the events of Abraham's life. This is no pop quiz. This is not a test without context. God didn't suddenly spring this extreme test on Abraham. And here's what you need to know. God will never spring an extreme test, a difficult test on you. It might feel like it. You might go, where did this come from? But I guarantee you, on the authority of God's character and his word, he doesn't spring something on you without first preparing you. Now, Abraham has now walked with God for about 30 years. And God has been preparing him through lesser tests along the way. I mean, Abraham has miserably failed in some of them, and some of them he's passed with flying colors, but he has been tested throughout his 30 or 40 years at this point of knowing God. God didn't test him like this until he was well equipped for it. And one of the unchanging and the comforting truths about God is that he will not give you a test that you cannot pass. He won't let you be tested without knowing that you can pass it. When God tests you, it will never be a gotcha moment. It only comes when you have been prepared. Secondly, God's tests are never without purpose. Not only preparation, but without purpose. Never without purpose. In verse 12, the Lord stops Abraham from slaying Isaac, and he says to him, "Now I know that you fear God. I know that you fear God." Now, God already knew that. God lives in the future. He exists in the beginning all the way through the end. He's apart from time. So he knew that. So something else is going on here. The word test is used 8 times in the Old Testament. And when it's used of God being the tester, it is always used in the Old English sense of the word test, and that is to prove. To prove. The word test means to prove something. God's testing is not to expose, but it's to improve. You know, our teachers tested us to expose us, right? God doesn't do that. He tests you to improve you. When God says, "Now that I know," this isn't for God's benefit. It's to give Abraham confidence that his faith in God has not been misplaced. This is no misplaced faith. Abraham's faith was tried. God's faithfulness was verified, and both were proven trustworthy in Abraham's mind. He is a trustworthy, faithful God. There was a mystic, a French mystic who lived in the 17th century. Her name was Jeanne Guyon. She was considered a heretic by the Catholic Church, and they imprisoned her. And she is thought to be the pioneer of the Quietist movement. She wrote a lot about prayer. I don't agree with everything that she wrote, but she said this about this business of faith. And she said, "At the start of the spiritual life, our hardest task is to bear with our neighbor." You know, when you first get saved and you first start walking with Jesus, it's those people next to you that you're going, for crying out loud, what is wrong with them? You know, that is the hardest thing that we have to bear is our neighbor. And then as we move along in this walk of faith, the hardest thing to bear is ourselves. You know, we start to get frustrated with us. We have met the enemy and he is us, right? At the end of the day, the hardest thing that we're called upon to bear is God himself, to bear God. I think her point was spot on, correct. Our faith is not really proven. I think what she's saying, our faith is not really proven until God asks us to bear what seems unbearable, to do what seems unreasonable, to expect what seems impossible. Our faith isn't ready. And so these tests of faith serve an essential purpose in our lives. They are meant to prove, they're meant to not only prove, but to move us beyond the shallowness of expectations, to move us beyond the shallowness of explanations, to standing on the conviction that God is trustworthy. Always. That's what a test of faith will do. Will prove to you that your faith in God has not been misplaced. That he can be trusted no matter what you have gone through. I think of some of you that have gone through some extreme tests of faith this last year. I'm so proud of you because I know you stand in that conviction that in spite of the pain, in spite of the loss, God is trustworthy. He's trustworthy. So tests serve an essential purpose in your life. And then third, God's tests are never without provision. Now, you know, I wouldn't want to just buy into the first two without this third one, that God's tests are never without provision. Verse 14 says, Abraham called the place the Lord will provide. Now, the emphasis here is not on the provision. It's on the provider. It's on the Lord who provides. The most important provision in this test and in every test is a prophetic revelation. The physical provision, whatever that might be, in this case a ram, but it might be more than that. It might be a physical healing. It might be $1 million for ministry, is not as important as the primary purpose of the test, and that is to reveal the provision of God. Now, that's not to say that those things aren't unimportant. Physical healings and money and the things that we pray for, answers to prayer, aren't unimportant. They are important, but they're secondary to the deeper revelation, and the deeper revelation is of the one who provides. God tests your faith in order to prophetically reveal himself to you. This test revealed to Abraham that in the journey of faith, God would always be present and that God would always provide. He's always there. He always has the answer. He always has your provision. The Lord provides always for Abraham and for you too. Whatever test of faith you're going through, whatever test of faith you will go through tomorrow or the next day or next year, God will always be present with you and God will always provide for you. He's the God who provides. So let's take this just a little bit deeper. And we're going to do that by looking at the second of the hard sayings that's found in verse 2. And this truly is the hardest of the hard sayings, where God says to him, God commands him, take your only son whom you love and sacrifice him as a burnt offering. Slay your son and offer him up to me. Now, remember that in the context of Abraham's journey, what we've been learning, that God had promised Abraham a son. Abraham was 90 years old when God said, I'm going to give you a son. Abraham says, I'm 90 years old. And God says, I'm going to give you a son. 10 years later, God gives him a son. But the promise wasn't just for a son. It was that through that son, there would be numerous descendants, so numerous, they would be like counting the stars and trying to count the sand on the seashore. That was the Abrahamic covenant God's promised him. But not only innumerable descendants, not only an increase of descendants, but it was for impact. God promised him worldwide impact, that through his descendants, the whole world would be blessed. That was the Abrahamic covenant. Through Abraham's seed, blessing would come to the world. And I think naturally, even at this point, naturally, Abraham wanted to know how this was going to happen. I mean, he's now, at least he has a son now, so he's got that part figured out, but now he's like 120 years old, 130 years old. And he's going, God, they got one son. I don't know how the whole numberless descendants is going to look. How are you going to pull this off? And now God is asking him, I want you to take this son who doesn't have children yet. He's just a young man. And I want you to slay him. I want you to sacrifice him to me. I think Abraham is going, God, how are you going to pull off this covenant? And not only that, but time's running out on Abraham. He's getting to be rather old. So God shows him here in chapter 22, in this test, he gives Abraham a sneak peek, if you will, a preview of the universal blessing to come in the ultimate sacrifice of the ultimate seed in the Abrahamic line, Jesus Christ. When you read this story, you see it immediately, don't you? This mirrors the future sacrifice of God the Son, God's only Son, Jesus Christ. And in this encounter, God is graciously showing, he's providing, he's revealing to Abraham that this is what the ultimate blessing is going to look like. The command to offer his only son prefigures. It is a theological type of God offering his only son as a sacrifice for the world. Now, let me explain that a little deeper. I want you to turn over to the New Testament, and we're going to go to the Gospel of John, chapter 8. John chapter 8. The context for this is that Jesus is in a conflict with the Jews, the religious leaders. And they are just rejecting Jesus' teaching. They're upset with him. He's upsetting their apple cart, and they're pushing back on him. They're rejecting his authority. And they're saying to him, hey, who do you think you are? He's talking to them about what it means to be a child of God, how to become a true child of God. And they said, hey, what are you talking about? We're the true children of Abraham. Who are you? And so Jesus says to them in verse 56, John chapter 8, verse 56, in response to their claim to be Abraham's rightful heirs, he says to them, your father Abraham rejoiced at the thought of seeing my day, and he saw it, and he was glad. Huh. And the Jews respond in verse 57, hey, you're not yet 50 years old, and yet you have seen Abraham? Some translations have it, And you're not even 50 years old, and Abraham has seen you? Now, that's really not a question. Now, I love the way my wife, tries to often help people, and she has a methodology. I don't even know if she's aware of this. Maybe she is, but she asks a lot of questions. And then she tries that technique on me as well. She asks me a lot of questions, and she really doesn't want an answer most of the time. She just wants me to think about something. And that's what these Jews are doing to Jesus. They're really not asking a question in this case. It's not a question. It is a rejection of his crazy claim. The crazy claim that Abraham saw Jesus' day and rejoiced. Now, the grammar of this, the Greek grammar of this, is very clear that Jesus claims that Abraham had literally seen with his eyes the events of Jesus' life up to this point. And he had already seen that Jesus would die and rise again. Very clear what Jesus is saying. Abraham literally saw my life, my death, my resurrection. Now, if that is true, that Abraham rejoiced when he saw Christ's sacrifice, where is that recorded in the Old Testament? Where is it recorded? Well, right here in Genesis 22, when God steps in to spare Isaac by providing a substitute sacrifice. Now, there's something else I'm not going to get into today because I'm going to cover it next week on Easter Sunday. We're going to stick with the Abraham story for Easter, which is going to be quite a stretch for me to make that work. But I think this is the second time that Abraham saw Jesus' life, death, and sacrifice. There's a first time that we'll talk about next week that enabled Abraham to come to this moment, and what he had seen prophetically, what he had heard prophetically from God himself earlier, he now saw in the most dramatic object lesson you can imagine here in chapter 22, his son being sacrificed on the altar. So for next week, you come back, right? Pray for me, because I only have a certain amount of time to pull together a very convoluted set of equations here, both from the Old and the New Testament, and make it sound like it's an Easter sermon. So I need your prayer. But I think it's going to be a tremendous revelation if I can pull that off. But right here in chapter 22, Abraham sees it. He sees it. Now, there is irrefutable evidence going on here that something bigger than just the sacrifice of Abraham's only son is going on. For starters, the distance that Abraham is asked to travel is very unusual if this was only a simple test of faith. I think if it was just a run-of-the-mill test of faith, God would have said to Abraham, take your son out in the backyard and kill him. Offer him up as a sacrifice. But he is told to travel 3 days. 3 days. Very symbolic. 3 days. On a march to death. For a specific reason, God sent him 3 days to this area. For another reason, God told him that the sacrifice was to take place on a mountain in the region of Moriah. Moriah is the site where Jerusalem was to be situated. Mount Moriah is the place where Jesus was to be sacrificed. Moriah is now called Mount Calvary. something else is going on here. Did God randomly choose a three-day journey to death on Mount Calvary? Well, obviously not. God never does anything randomly. There's something more going on here. Genesis 22, verse 14 prophetically declares that on the mountain of the Lord, what is the mountain of the Lord? Mount Calvary. On the mountain of the Lord, it will be provided. It will be provided. This was an Old Testament shadow, a theological type of the New Testament reality to come. Furthermore, notice Abraham's prophetic response. Genesis chapter 22, verse 8. As Isaac points out, as they're walking along, they're going to sacrifice. He's got the wood on his back. Abraham's carrying the fire and a knife. And Isaac goes, wait a minute, Dad. Something missing here. What are we going to kill? What are we going to sacrifice? And Abraham says this, verse 8. Son, God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering. The King James Version, which is not the version that I use, but I love how it says this. This is the way it renders, it translates verse 8. It says, son, God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. God will provide himself a lamb. God will provide himself. God will provide himself a lamb for a burnt offering. Now, I know without a shadow of a doubt that the Bible scholars, there might be some in this audience today, would accuse me of taking liberty with this text in saying that I think the King James rendering of this is prophetically accurate, that God will provide himself as the lamb for the sacrifice, that God will provide himself as the lamb, which he did, didn't he? Literally for Abraham and literally for the whole world. As John chapter 1, verse 29 says, he provided himself as the Lamb of God that takes away the sin of the world. God provided himself as the Lamb. He will provide. And the great reformer Martin Luther was leading his family in devotions, and they were talking about the story. And as he was reading the story, he came to the part where Abraham was going to kill his son. And his wife, Kate, said to Martin, she interrupted him very vocally and determinedly. She said, Martin, I don't believe that God would do that to his son. God would not do that to his son. And Martin said, Katie, God did. God did. God tested Abraham's faith, substituting the lamb to prophetically reveal himself as the God who provides. And when God tests your faith, it is to irrefutably prove himself to you as the God who will provide. Always. Always. He is the God who provides. There was an elderly woman who was living in a senior adult care home. And she was in the bell lap of her life, and she was, as some are at that stage of life, just weighed down by worries and anxieties and cares, some of them real, just some of them imagined, perceived in her mind. You know, she was facing the kind of loss of significance, coming to the end of her life, facing financial difficulties and all those kind of things. And she was just very upset, very weighed down. And her adult son was visiting her one day, and she was pouring out her worries and her concerns to the son, and he kept trying to encourage her, and she just persisted in saying, but it's not gonna, I don't know what I'm gonna do. And finally, out of exasperation, the son said to him, Mom, we have done all we can for you. Now you are going to have to trust God for the rest. You'll have to trust God for the rest. And in absolute despair, she said, oh my, has it come to that? Has it come to that? Since it always comes to that, right, we might as well begin with that. Right. And I want to give you a chance this morning to begin anew with that. He is the God who provides. He is the God who will provide your salvation. If you are here today and you have not surrendered to Jesus Christ, God's provision for your sin, He will provide for that. If you walked into this place with a financial worry bigger than you can carry, He will provide for that. If you are carrying a concern for your family members, broken relationships, addictions, horrible behavior, He will provide for that. If you're carrying this emotional weight, something in your life, maybe a sin, maybe an addiction for yourself, whatever it is, He will provide for whatever you need. He is the God who provides. That is His covenant revelation to you this morning. And so I want to give you a chance to put your trust in that. I'm going to ask you to stand. And if that's you, I want you to walk down to this altar this morning. Our musicians will come and begin to play. But if that's you, if you need a revelation of the God who will provide for whatever you need right now, just walk down to the front here, and we're going to make a stand on the conviction that God is who He says He is. He can be trusted. He is trustworthy. He is the God who provides. You walk down, and we'll pray in this last moment. Come on down. Come on down. If you're up in the balcony and you need to do this, we'll wait for you. Come on down.
Thank you for listening to the Portland Christian Center podcast. For more information about the ministries of Portland Christian Center, please visit us online at pcctoday.com. Again, thank you for listening.